Don't Depend on Daddy is an unfiltered safe space, empowering young professionals to build independence in their 20s and beyond, whether it be personal, professional, or financial. Regardless of your age, relationship status, or job title, the most consistent person in your life is you. So join me and let's build our independence together. Enjoy! Hello and welcome back to Don't Depend on Daddy. My name is Michaela. I am your host and I'm so excited for today's episode because we're talking about how to elevate your career. Before we get into the juice of everything, I'm going to run through the housekeeping super, super, super quick. And then we have some fun announcements, obviously, and then we'll get into the meat and potatoes of the episode. So first things first, as always, you can get $10 off the personal finance dashboard if you use the code PODCAST1. Everything you need to know about the PFD is on the sales page in the show notes, so go check it out if you are new here. If you are interested in creating a financial plan or putting together any sort of plan for your money, make sure you check out my free financial planning email course, which you can enroll in using the personal finance financial planning checklist, which is also in the show notes. And if you haven't read Own Your Money, you totally should. Anyways, if you have tuned in on Instagram, this week I formally announced that my next book, Own Your Career, is officially available for pre-order, which I'm so excited about. And the publication date, which you already know, is on July 2nd, so about 3 months from today, which is insane. And yeah, we're in that formal pre-order period. So what does a pre-order mean? It just means that you're placing your order for your book before the actual publication date. And so if you do pre-order the book, I am hosting a three-part webinar series where you will, you know, get all of the information to register for these webinars once you submit your name, your email, and your confirmation code. And what happens in each of these webinars, it's correlated with each month before we actually get to the publication date. The first month, we're going to do like a big career reset, career audit, figuring out what is important to you in your job and define success for you in your career. The second month, we're going to go through all the tactical stuff. So like putting together a plan for the next position that you want to end up in, whether that be a new job or a promotion, going over your resume, you'll get a job application tracker. There's lots of stuff going on there. And then the last webinar is going to be how to start and scale a six-figure side hustle. So if you're interested in learning more about this, make sure you go to my book website. It's breakyourbudget.com/OYC for Own Your Career dash book, B-O-O-K. I'll make sure it's also linked in the show notes so that you can go and get all of that information. But basically on that page, you can get linked out to all the places where you can pre-order the book. So Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, Bookshop, and Target, as well as all the information you need to know about the book, how to submit your information so that you can get those webinar details. And if you are also interested in just sending me a DM on Instagram, you can just DM me the word book, and or you can go comment the word book on the pinned post on my Instagram profile that just is like a picture of the Own Your Career cover. You can go do that and all of the information will go directly to you once you place that pre-order. So pre-orders, I'll say it once, and I'm going to say this every week, honestly, between now and July. Pre-orders are so incredibly important. They're honestly probably the most important part of like the book marketing process. I have put, you know, blood, sweat, and tears into Own Your Career. I will say Own Your Career and Own Your Money are two incredibly and distinctly different books. Own Your Career doesn't have any illustrations or anything. It's more text heavy. It's written in a different style. It's just a very, very different book. It's also going to be a hardcover book, which is really exciting. So if you are interested in checking it out, again, all that information will be in the show notes. And if you pre-order the book, make sure you let me know. I'm also going to be doing like a little bit of a giveaway for pre-order people. So when you enter all of your information with your pre-order number to register, I also get like all of your information. It's all connected to my email. And so I'm going to be doing giveaways for like all of my products, like the PFD and the 4-week financial plan and everything. Basically, for every 100 people that pre-order, I'm going to pick one or two people to get access to all of my products, whether you've purchased them or not. So yeah. So if you do pre-order, even if you don't want to come to the webinar, just register with your information so that I have that information logged so that you can be included in those giveaways. Anyways, we're going to move on. The Don't Depend on Daddy moment of the week this week for me is that I've started taking tennis lessons, and I pushed myself out of my comfort zone to go to tennis lessons alone, which is not something that the old version of me would have ever done. Essentially, I signed up for like a tennis membership here in Los Angeles. They have like a few tennis clubs over on the west side. And I signed up for a membership where I can go to a handful of tennis clinics every single month. It's $150. I started on Sunday. And I also went to one this morning. I'm recording this on the 2nd, so the day before this goes up, Tuesday morning. I went to a tennis lesson this morning. It was so fun. And I've started to meet some new people doing it, which is exciting. We exchanged phone numbers. So hopefully I make some more friends by playing tennis. And also I'm learning a new sport. I used to take tennis lessons. If you've been here for a while, you know, like just about 2 years ago around this time, I was taking tennis lessons with my roommate. And I sort of just fell off of it. And now I'm getting back into it. I'm really enjoying it. It's a fun challenge and it's really social. So I'm excited about it. So that is my Don't Depend on Daddy moment of the week. We're being independent and going after new hobbies, new interests, taking making friends into my own hands, which I'm super excited about. So now that we've got all the housekeeping special announcement out of the way, let's get into the 8 ways that you can elevate your career in your 20s and beyond. So these 8 ways actually correlate with different chapters of Own Your Career. So you're going to get a little taste of what you can expect in Own Your Career. Obviously, me speaking words is very different than like formally writing words. So like keep that in mind. But essentially every way that you're going to elevate your career that I'm going to talk about here, again, correlates with a chapter of Own Your Career. So you'll get a little taste of what to expect. With that, let's kick things off. The first way that you can elevate your career in your 20s is to discover your definition of success at work. All throughout high school and college, we are fed that there is only one traditional path to be successful. And that path is to go to school, get a job, and climb the corporate ladder. And there's no emphasis on exploring anything else. And I don't even necessarily mean exploring your passions, because I don't personally believe in, this is just my opinion, it's not fact, but I personally don't believe in exploring your passions for a career when you're really young. I think you should just get some experience and use that experience to then inform how you want to sort of blend your passion with a career later on in life, but that is a different podcast episode. But what I guess my point here is I don't necessarily mean that like you need to explore your passions to figure out what your definition of success is at work. I mean, exploring other career paths that are outside of a corporate setting isn't something that is emphasized. And I think that is why a lot of people struggle with understanding what their definition of success at work truly is. So on top of being fed that the only thing that like is deemed successful is going to college and getting a job and climbing the corporate ladder, we are not given the tools to figure out how to navigate defining what success looks like on an individual level. And I honestly think that this is what leads to burnout and feeling a lack of purpose in life, and why so many people in their 20s reach like their mid to late-ish 20s, like 25, 26 is where it sort of starts. And then, you know, you get into 27, 28, and I feel like a lot of people start to panic and they struggle because, again, your whole life, you're given this definition of success, you're given this path. And then for those few years right after college, you know, you're in like the thick of work and you're getting used to being an adult. So it's not really top of mind, but that mid 20s, 25, 26, it hits you like a ton of bricks. This is where it sets in, where you're like, oh my God, what do I actually want to do with my life? And how do I figure this out? And I really don't think that you have this epiphany until you've experienced a few years of just working, where you're like learning what work is like, what to expect, what different jobs are like. That period of time is so important, which is why, going back to what I said earlier, I don't necessarily believe in like exploring your, or believe is not the right word, but like, I don't think it's most opportune to explore all of these different career paths right off the bat. I do think having an ounce of corporate experience is super helpful to give you perspective, but it's at this point in time after the fact where defining what career success looks like to you is, you know, the most important thing you can do. Because you can then begin to prioritize the other pillars of your life a little bit differently. So how can you figure out what your definition of success is at work? And when I say your definition of success, I mean, what are the things that are going to make you happy in your career? And I'll start by sharing some examples. For some people, their definition of success at work is having a 9-to-5, doing the bare minimum, and signing on at 9, signing off at 5, collecting their paycheck, and going about their life and doing other things. There is nothing wrong with that. For other people, their definition of success at work could be to feel really challenged and really fulfilled by the work that they're doing. So that could be maybe pursuing a more challenging, you know, cognitive career, like being a lawyer or something. For other people, their definition of success at work could be helping people. So that means, you know, you could be exploring a job in a nonprofit organization, or maybe you're a nurse or a doctor or something. But getting clear on what your individual definition of success at work is, especially around this like 25-ish, 26-ish range, is crucial. So here are a couple of thought starters that you can ask yourself to really think through, like, what is most important to me? So number one, what am I looking for in a job? Am I looking for a challenge? Am I looking for work-life balance? Am I looking for a team where I can make a lot of friends? Am I looking for a scenario where I can help people? Am I looking to change the world? Am I looking to just collect a check? Am I looking to develop a different skill set? You know, think about what are the things that you're actually looking for in a job. Again, this isn't something I feel like a lot of people do. You know, I think it's like, oh, I'm looking to be an account manager. Why? What are the reasons? What are the skills or things you're developing in that role that make you want to do that? Besides just the money, because obviously the money is the most motivating factor at work, but like, it's not everything. You know, you've got to at least have a degree of satisfaction in your job. The next question you can ask yourself is, what phase of my career am I in? Do I really want to go like hard at work right now, or do I want to find a balance? And what do I want this to look like in the next 5-ish to 10-ish years? You don't have to put together a 5-year plan, but remember your career sort of goes in phases. So like, you might be in a phase where you don't have a lot going on in your personal life and you have a lot of time to really devote and dedicate to work. So maybe you want to go really, really hard. Your definition of success right now could be to have a challenging career where you're learning a lot and where you're really busy and you're working long hours because you want to be a sponge and absorb as much as you can. Or maybe, you know, you just had a baby and your definition of success is collecting your check. Again, that's totally fine. But write it down. Identify and think about what phase of your career you're in. Remember, phases change, and what your definition of success is now might be a little bit different than next year. Another question to ask yourself is, what do I actually like doing at work? Do I even like the career path that I'm on, or do I feel like I'm stuck doing this? There's this sunk cost fallacy with a job where people think like, oh, I've spent 10 years working in this industry, like I might as well just keep doing it even though I hate it. It's never too late to make a change, and it's totally fine to make a lateral move or to take one step back in order to take 5 steps forward. So really, really get clear on, do you actually like the path you are on? And if the answer to that question is no, it's okay. We can figure out how to get you on a path you actually enjoy. The next question here to think about is, in a perfect state, what would my ideal, realistic lifestyle look like? So a lot of what people equate a dream job to, which if you know, you know, your dream job doesn't exist. But what a lot of people equate this dream job to is actually a dream lifestyle. You know, they're looking for what the job gives them. They're not actually looking for the job. So think about what your ideal, realistic lifestyle could actually look like. Do you want to own a home? You know, do you want to be able to, you know, have control over your time? Do you want work-life balance? Do you want to have a family? I don't know. I'm just kind of spitballing here. Like, everybody's life looks different, right? But what does yours look like ideally? Your definition of success is your "this is enough" statement. Okay, so I think another thing that we all struggle with post-grad, because, you know, graduation or graduating college and getting a job is sort of that end point to the beginning of your life, right? You're working all through high school and into college to graduate and to get a job. And then you get that job and there is no more in your life, there's no other point in your life where it's like, okay, this is the end point. This is enough. This is how I can deem myself successful. You have to create that. So your definition of success at work is your "this is enough" statement, is what you are working to reach, where you can, it's It's what you're working to reach, where you can sit back and look at your life and be like, yes, I am content and satisfied with my career right now. I have no notes. Okay. That's your definition of success. I used to pursue what I thought was my definition of success. So this was my career in finance. I thought that if I got a finance job in a finance industry and was doing what sounded cool externally, I would feel fulfilled. I thought I would be successful at that point. What I found from actually doing that was I was seeking external validation instead of internal validation. So now my definition of success is working only 40 hours a week, no more. I mean, I don't really work any less than that, but hopefully I'm not working more than that. Having control over my life and not having a manager breathing down my neck, and then also not caring if, you know, someone thinks what I do is stupid. Because my definition of success at work is about me. It's not about other people. And I really want to make sure that if you're thinking about how do I get happy at work, you're only thinking of yourself. You're not thinking of what other people think of or interpret your job to be. Okay, we spent a lot of time on that one, so we're going to move on to number two. So the second way that you can elevate your career in your 20s is to begin building human capital. Human capital is more than just your repertoire of skills. So a lot of people think that like they'll be successful at work if they have a lot of skills, and that's true, but it takes more than just hard skills to be really successful in any facet of life, but especially work. So human capital is more than just your repertoire of skills. It's how you implement those skills, approach your work, interact with others, share your perspective, and enable the team you work on or company you work at to succeed. You build human capital by gaining a variety of work and life experience, and this takes time. So really, building human capital just means to become a well-rounded person, both inside and outside of the office. And I'll share some examples of what both look like. So personal life examples of human capital could include things like volunteer work, so volunteering for nonprofits, doing community service, showing up, taking advantage of those opportunities if they present themselves at work or through your work or through a local group in your community. So that's number one. Traveling is a big one. I know not everybody gets to do a lot of travel as, you know, a child or in college or whatever, but if you are someone who wants to explore, lean into that urge. Save money or set money aside so that you can do small trips, big trips, whatever makes sense for your lifestyle. But traveling and experiencing different countries and cultures and people can help you develop a global perspective and gain exposure to different ways of thinking and problem solving. So experiencing new cultures, ideas, and perspectives that you haven't encountered before broadens your understanding of the world while also helping you develop skills in, you know, adaptability and problem solving. So traveling really has a lot of benefits. If you haven't done any traveling yet, I encourage you to look for ways that you can add that into your life, obviously keeping your budget in mind. Another personal life way to build human capital is by pursuing hobbies. So that's pursuing your interests and hobbies outside of the work to develop new skills and knowledge that you can then transfer to your career. So break your budget used to be my hobby before it became my job. It allowed me to lean into interests I didn't know I had in the workplace. And it also allowed me to just develop new skills that have now become integral to my own career success. So those are a few quick examples of personal life human capital, but you can also build human capital in the workplace. So a few examples of how to do this would be training and development programs. So a lot of workplaces offer like free training or development programs. They also offer employee resource groups. So that's different ways to meet people and collaborate and find mentorship. Another way could be networking. So networking and mentorship, really, those sort of go hand in hand. So that's building your network, reaching out for coffee dates, finding a mentor, bringing something to the table when you have these conversations. This is really important. Your network is your net worth. I hate to say that, but it is true. It's not what you know, it's who you know. So make sure if you are in a corporate setting, you are making an effort to build relationships. It doesn't have to be like, oh, you're reaching out for a favor when you want to get an interview somewhere. It's, I am nurturing the relationships that are in my orbit. And honestly, it's whether you like the people or not. If you don't like someone, get used to building a relationship with someone who you don't particularly like. That is a skill in and of itself, and it's really important in the corporate world. Another example here would be, you know, specific industry training or certification. So if you are in an industry where there's certifications, like a few that I did early on in my career was I became a certified Scrum Master, and I took like agile trainings and stuff. And that was all so incredibly important for all the jobs I did because that sort of knowledge was very desirable. And I was also able to put it on my resume. I also took the CFA exam, only level one, which I did pass on my first try, but I did take that exam and that taught me a ton about just like investing and was really important in the industry that I was in. And then the last way to build like human capital in the workplace is seeking new responsibilities. So that's taking on new projects or challenges in your current role, seeking out ways to learn about other roles that exist, what other people have going on. A great way to see or find new responsibilities that could be interesting to you is to like think of a team that's, you know, maybe lateral to what you're currently doing. Reach out to someone on that team, set up a coffee date or some sort of, you know, quick 15-minute intro call or something and just be like, hey, you know, I'm looking to explore what other people are doing at the company. I'd love to hear a little bit about your role if you're interested in sharing. And usually people are. So do that. That helps expand your network and it will give you just a fresh perspective on work, which is so important. I think a lot of people forget that your unique perspective, your unique experience, whatever's happened to you specifically in your life is valuable in the workplace. You just need to create your story. You need to figure out what are the things and experiences that I've had that give me a fresh look or a fresh perspective that maybe my coworker who has a comparable skill set doesn't have. Okay, what sets you apart in your personal life and then also in your professional life? That's human capital. Moving on to number three, the third way that you can elevate your career in your 20s and beyond is to create a rock solid resume. And you should be updating your resume every 6 months. It's a lot easier to update your resume when you have the framework of your resume done correctly the first time. So I'm gonna hit a few points here. First being that there are five best practices to creating a compelling resume that will increase your chances of landing an interview without a connection. And these come from Austin Belsack's resume study. If you want to find it, you can literally Google Austin Belsack resume. It will be the first thing that comes up. But essentially, it covers and says that every resume that they've deemed successful or increases your chances of getting an interview includes a LinkedIn profile, so a link out or an easily searchable way to find your full and complete LinkedIn profile that has full job descriptions, a full and complete summary, and an updated headshot. The second aspect of a resume that makes it successful is that it includes keywords that match the job description. The third is that it incorporates measurable metrics. The fourth is that your resume is between 475 to 600 words. So that's about one page long. And the fifth is that you avoid using too many buzzwords and fluff. So following these five best practices is your best chance at creating a resume that pops and stands out that a recruiter will actually look at. Obviously, inside Own Your Career, I go into these in more detail, and I will be going into these in more detail, you know, on my page and whatnot. But those are the five high-level things you need to pay attention to. Something that's important to remember is that a recruiter spends an average of 7 seconds scanning your resume for details to determine if you are a good fit for a specific role. So this highlights how important it is to create a resume with keywords, but a resume that also emphasizes your skills and experience that is relevant to the job you're applying for. I look back to early on in my career when I was applying to jobs, I just submitted the same resume over and over and over again to all different types of jobs. What I should have done was I should have pillared the jobs I was applying to. So like I was applying to investment jobs, I was applying to FP&A jobs, and I was also applying to like finance/tech integrated jobs. And what I should have done was instead of doing one resume that goes to all of those different things, I should have created three versions of my resume that really highlighted my skills that were related to those specific types of jobs. I think I would have had to apply to a lot less jobs and I would have seen a much higher success rate. So beyond that, having a resume that's catered towards the jobs you're applying for, you want to make sure you're incorporating measurable and quantifiable data on your resume and use the XYZ formula. The XYZ formula is I accomplished X as measured by Y by doing Z. What this does is it highlights your strengths and demonstrates the impact that you have in a job in a clear and concise manner. I do have a free resume template, which is available for download. Again, always in the show notes, or at a minimum, it's on my links page or on my website, breakyourbudget.com/downloads, if you want to get it, if it's not in the show notes, which it will be, but just in case, if you want to go find it. And it goes through not only how to implement the XYZ formula, but also lots and lots of examples of what that looks like. So I'm not going to go into it in too much detail on this podcast episode. But what you want to do is you want to go through and audit your bullet points and make sure they're following this formula and also including measurable and quantifiable metrics on at least 50% of your bullet points if possible. 50% is like the minimum. And then the last thing that you want to pay attention to when it comes to your resume is the formatting. So that's making sure that you don't have any images, because you can be subject to unintentional bias if you put an image on your resume. You don't want to have any logos. You don't want to have any icons or graphics or anything like that. You want to have a very simple text-only resume with your name and, you know, identifiable information at the top. And then beneath that, you want to have your most recent experience, your second most recent experience, and then your third most recent experience if you have three, or the three most relevant job experiences you have to the jobs that you're applying for. Beneath your job experience, you have your education, any additional education, so like study abroad, certifications, whatever. And then at the bottom, if you have room, skills and personal. All of this, again, is highlighted on that free resume template. So if you don't have it, I recommend that you go check that out just so that you have a clear example of what that looks like. So that's the third way that you can elevate your career in your 20s. Now we'll move into number four, which is to negotiate your salary to earn more money at each job. Negotiation is an art, okay? And I think it's really important when you're going into a negotiation to remember that a negotiation is a conversation. It is not an argument. And if you argue, you'll probably lose. Or you won't get what you're looking for. Lose is not the right word. Anyways, I'm going to share five tips that can help you win your negotiation. So the first one is to obviously research and gather relevant information. So you need to understand your market value before you go into the conversation. So you can look at Glassdoor, you can look at LinkedIn, you can look at comparable salaries on LinkedIn for roles in the same state, or honestly, even in different states, because they're generally pretty consistent. You know, obviously there's outliers like New York and California, but like, you can see what similar roles are being paid, like what people in similar roles are being paid on LinkedIn, because they, you know, include that compensation information. So make sure you, look at, you know, market research and whatnot, but also consider your personal qualifications. So this is where human capital, experience, perspective, and value that you would bring to the organization. Step number two is to prioritize your needs and wants. So understanding what aspects of the job offer are most important to you can help you identify where you'd like to negotiate, because you can negotiate beyond your base salary. You can potentially negotiate a signing bonus. You can negotiate to guarantee your bonus. You can negotiate to have a higher bonus percentage. You can negotiate stock options. You know, you can potentially negotiate PTO days. There are so many things that you can negotiate. So go through the compensation package and understand what are your must-haves and your nice-to-haves, knowing that you're probably going to need to compromise on something. So order those in order of priority. The third tip here is to actually plan out your strategy or game plan for the conversation. So you want to set clear objectives for the outcome by defining what your target salary range is or any specific requests you plan to ask for. It's likely that whatever offer you've received is hopefully within that specific salary range, and it's also likely that you've already discussed the salary range with a recruiter. But let's imagine you discuss a salary range of 70 to 80K and they lowballed you and gave you 70 and you really want to get closer to 80K. You want to make sure that that's a clear and defined objective before you go into the conversation so that you're like prepared and ready to go. Okay. So that is the third tip. The fourth tip is to present your case. And before you present your case, you want to practice what you want to say out loud. Just like you would prepare for an interview, you want to prepare for this sort of conversation where you're like saying whatever it is that you wanted to say out loud first so that you're comfortable saying it. And the first time you say it isn't that when you're on the phone or talking directly with the HR person. But okay, so let's imagine you're going into this prepared. You're going to be presenting your case. So as I mentioned earlier, a negotiation is just a conversation. So you can go into it and just plan to have like a little bit of a discussion. Like, this is what I am looking at and this is what I want to talk about. It doesn't have to be like, I'm coming in and if you don't give me $80K, I'm not taking this job. You're not going to get what you're looking for. But you just need to be clearly articulating your value based on your skills, experience, and qualifications and explain why you believe your request for either a higher salary or additional benefits is justified. Again, the goal is for both parties to walk away satisfied, so you want to compromise. You're going to have to compromise on something. And the last step is to allow there to be silence when you do actually have the conversation. This is something that a lot of people struggle with because I do feel like negotiations can feel confrontational, even though they're not supposed to, and they shouldn't. But like, even if you have like a perfectly nice conversation, it's uncomfortable to ask for stuff. You know, I think that's something a lot of people struggle with, myself included. And so when you do make your request, it's natural to want to fill the silence because it's awkward, you know, and you probably feel a little bit weird. So you're going to ramble. Don't do this. You need to resist the urge to fill the silence, and you have to get a little bit more comfortable with the fact that you might ask for something and there might be a 10 second pause. Let there be silence. Allow the recruiter the space to respond and then listen to their perspective, because there's only three ways it can go. You're either gonna get what you want, they're gonna say yes and you can move on and yay. They're gonna say no, in which case you decide you're willing to accept the offer as it is. Or they're going to say they need to go talk to someone and they'll circle back with you. In which case, like, that's totally fine, because a lot of times there are company policies and there are budgets that are in place that the recruiter does not have control over. And they need to go either get approval for something, or they need to see if there's wiggle room, or they need to make sure that something you're asking for doesn't violate a company policy. So if the answer to your question or your request is, I need to circle back with you, that's not a no. It's not a cause to freak out. It's just, okay, something here is beyond my control and I'm going to let the situation play out. So allow there to be silence. Don't get intimidated by the silence and just see where the conversation goes with no expectations. Okay, so those are my tips for winning your negotiation. There is a strategy called the negotiation sandwich, which I share in the book with Scripps, but I'm not going to say it on the podcast. The next way that you can elevate your career in your 20s is to ensure that you nail whatever interview you are having so that you can get the most competitive offer. So ideally, then you don't even have to negotiate, although you should negotiate every offer you get no matter what. So I'm going to share some tips for nailing your interview. So the first thing that I really want to highlight is that interviewing is a two-way street. So the interview process is just as much an opportunity for you to evaluate the company as it is for them to evaluate you. I think level setting on this power dynamic before you go into an interview is so important. You have to remind yourself that they're not necessarily choosing you. You are also choosing them. It's a mutual process. That really helps you get your power back when it comes to being in an interviewing setting, which can feel very intimidating. There are three, sometimes four, main phases of an interview process. Generally, the process goes the phone screen, the hiring manager conversation, potentially a team interview or a panel interview, and then depending on the role in the company, you may have to do a case study. Each phase is unique and requires a different strategy and approach to be prepared, which I go into in detail inside the book. Obviously, if you're listening to this and you have had a job before, you've experienced an interview. But there are ways to actually prepare for an interview that can, you know, make or break your success. And it all boils down to having like a Rolodex essentially of answers to questions so that you know how to actually articulate a story or, you know, an experience that you had. So I recommend, this is actually something that comes from Darcy Smith, who was on the podcast, and she is the one who talks about this as well. I talk about it in the book, like I share some of her specific perspective. I recommend that you prepare a Rolodex of sorts for behavioral questions and answers that you can use throughout your interview process overall. This is really like a key differentiator, in my opinion, between people who are and aren't successful in interviews, is the people who are successful have multiple stories for multiple different questions that they're anticipating being asked. So behavioral questions are pretty straightforward. Lots of interviews, they'll ask you like, tell me about a time when you experienced conflict in the workplace. Tell me about a time where you were under a lot of competing deadlines. Tell me about a time where you had to solve a problem or improve a process. Like, if you have a Rolodex of answers to these questions with multiple different examples, so like maybe you have 2 examples of solving a problem in one job and 3 examples of solving a problem in a different job, and you have those ready to go, if you get a nuanced question, you have multiple things that you can pull from to actually answer the question. And all of this goes into the preparation process. I honestly recommend you just do it in a spreadsheet. I used to have a spreadsheet of all of the behavioral questions that I would anticipate, which like you can literally Google behavioral questions for interviews and put together a list of the most common ones. And then I would have a cell next to each question, up to 5 or 6 with different examples that I could use and prepare for, depending again on the role that I was applying to. So generally you can like kind of anticipate what to expect depending on the role you're applying to, but it's again also always good to have examples. So keep in mind, behavioral questions focus on like how you approach different workplace scenarios, conflict, problem solving, organization, time management, those kinds of things. So beyond just preparation, you also want to use what's called the STAR method to clearly articulate your experience and skill set during the interview. So the STAR method is situation, task, action, and result. So that's giving the person who is asking the question a clear visual of what the situation actually was, what the task was that you needed to accomplish, what you did to accomplish that task, and then the result, the outcome, how did it all go? Okay, so definitely think about using the STAR method when you're creating this brain Rolodex, or like this Rolodex of information. When you're writing out like, tell me about a time when you solved a problem, you're thinking about, okay, what was the problem? What was the task that I needed to accomplish? What was the action I took? And what was the result? And literally write out STAR in your answer to each, and that will help you create the story. Because again, when you're answering a question, you want to be telling a story, clearly articulating what was going on and the impact that you had. The other thing that I would recommend is when you are preparing for an interview, if you really want to do well, is to practice your answers out loud. A lot of people fumble in interviews, and I remember during times when I was on the other side of an interview where I would interview someone, obviously there's nerves involved, but you can always tell when it's the first time someone has said something out loud. Like, you can generally, again, anticipate the kinds of questions you're going to get practicing your answers out loud, okay? Don't practice it in your head, because the way that you think something versus the way that you actually say something are 2 different things. I've learned this the hard way, obviously through interviewing, but also through just like making videos and making a podcast. I can't script something out in my brain. I have to like read it out loud first, which if you've been listening to the podcast, you could probably tell the episodes where I didn't practice or I didn't clearly formulate a sentence. I mean, it happens, I think, pretty much every time I record a podcast at some point or the other, but like my best episodes are the ones that are a little bit more rehearsed. So just keep that in mind. Like the way that you read something, the way that you think of something is going to be very different than how you actually speak it. So get used to the cadence so that you can actually answer the question and answer it confidently, okay? If you've already said something before, the second time you say it, you're probably going to feel a little bit better about it, and it will just help exude confidence. Like, you're there, you know what you're talking about, you're prepared, you're ready to go. That's a good look in an interview. Okay, the sixth thing, oh my gosh, this is a longer episode than I was expecting, so please bear with me. The sixth thing you can do to elevate your career in your 20s is to create a task management system for succeeding during pivotal career conversations. So a task management system is essentially just your way of task tracking and project management, what you're doing at work. I obviously have a template for this. This isn't the first time you're hearing it. The Own Your Career template, it just pairs beautifully with Own Your Career. Am I right? Go pre-order it if you haven't. But the task management system is keeping track of what you are working on during the week, the priority and the deadline, also tracking any feedback you receive, any unplanned asks, and spending 10 minutes at the end of the week to list out your weekly accomplishments. So 3 to 5 things you did that week, maybe one thing per day that you accomplished. Having this task management system makes it so much easier for you to aggregate all of the work you've done and have it all clear and nice and organized so you're prepared for important career conversations like asking for a raise, asking for a promotion, interviewing for a job, updating your resume. If you have all the information in one place, obviously, it's a lot easier to go find it and to not have to like force yourself to think back. You don't forget about things. And again, you're more confident. You have proof. Another way to call, or like another thing people call task management systems, is like a brag sheet. So either get the Own Your Career template, put together your own little Word document, create a folder on your desktop, and make sure you are keeping track of what you are doing, positive feedback you receive, constructive feedback you receive, and how you address it. Any unplanned asks, because you're definitely getting asked to do stuff that's outside of your job description, which is totally fine. You should do it if it makes sense for you. But you want to make sure you're keeping track of who's asking for that. Are they asking for that kind of stuff all the time? Is it becoming a more regular part of your workflow, in which case you're getting additional responsibilities that you should be compensated for at some point? And also because when you have like performance reviews and stuff, if somebody's always asking you for favors, you want to make sure that you're asking for a favor back for them to actually, you know, be one of those people that endorses you during those conversations. I remember we used to have in all of my jobs, it was always like you had to ask 3 or 4 people you work with regularly for feedback to submit during those end of year performance reviews. So if you've always got someone messaging you like, hey, I need a favor, then that person can extend the favor the other way and actually provide you one of those recommendations or endorsements or whatever. So all of those are benefits for creating a task management system. The 7th thing you can do to elevate your career in your 20s is to choose a side hustle. So side hustling, it gets a bad reputation. I think it's become just like such a buzzword, and people associate having a side hustle with being an influencer because that is the most common side hustle that you're probably seeing if you are consuming content online. I also think that a lot of like coaches and whatnot have gotten really gimmicky with side hustles and like, follow my 3 steps and you'll be a super successful business owner or whatever and quit your job. Like, here's how I make 10K a month freelancing, whatever. All of that's good and great. But at the end of the day, if you want to actually start a long-term side hustle that has legs, it's going to take you more than 3 months. It's probably going to take you at least a year. So anybody promising you a timeline less than that is, you know, maybe trying to get you to pay them. Food for thought. But anyways, you want to choose the right side hustle for you that makes sense for your life and your priorities and what you want out of that side hustle. So ask yourself, what's my goal of the side hustle? Am I looking to pick up extra cash, or am I looking to quit my job? Those are 2 very distinct different goals. There are 2 types of side hustles you can choose from. The first is a low or no skill side hustle. So this doesn't mean that there are no skills required, but it's essentially meaning like, you are leveraging an app or a platform or something that already exists to pick up additional work that you can add into your schedule. So that could be like Uber or Rover or Wag or Instacart or whatever, you know, those things where it's like, okay, all I have to do is submit a background check. And if I have 3 hours after work one day to go do Instacarting, like I can pick that work up. That counts as a side hustle. That would be a low to no skill side hustle because you don't necessarily have to like learn anything new beyond just how to navigate the app, right? A skill-based side hustle would be something where you are monetizing a specific skill. This is more of like a freelance content creation, building your own business kind of side hustle. So Break Your Budget is a skill-based side hustle, or was before it became my job, because I was monetizing a skill I had, which was, you know, budgeting, personal financial knowledge, Excel, because I build my templates and all of that. So think about what your goal is, and if you even have a skill that you want to monetize. Like generally, I would say if your goal is to just pick up some extra money, a low to no skill side hustle is the way to go. If you're looking to like quit your job, then you'd want to go the skill-based route because the low to no skill side hustle isn't as isn't as scalable as the skill-based side hustle. I think there's just more opportunities to make a lot more money when you are monetizing a skill versus leveraging a third-party app. Again, more detail on this in the book. And then the last thing you can do to elevate your career in your 20s is to actually launch and scale that side hustle to six figures. And there are a handful of things that need to happen in order to do that. So I'm going to give you the cliff notes. There are four key phases to starting a skill-based side hustle. So remember, if you want to sort of reach like that six-figure range, your best bet is to go a skill-based way. It's definitely not impossible to go the low to no skill route and reach six figures, but it's going to be a lot harder because there's so many more elements that are outside of your control. And you also don't own the app. So everything you're doing, that app is taking a cut of everything that you're earning. So if you want to reach six figures, your best chance at doing so in the shortest amount of time, which realistically is like at least a year, would be to go the skill-based route. So there are four phases to getting this up and off the ground. First is coming up with the idea. So you need to make sure that you have an idea that's unique enough. It doesn't need to be a groundbreaking unique idea, but it needs to be a concept that's a little bit different, a little bit more unique to you. So we'll use Break Your Budget as the example. Personal finance online is not a new concept. It's definitely gotten more popular over the last like two or so years. But when I first started, there weren't any girls talking about personal finance on Instagram. I'll tell you that. In 2019, that wasn't going on. So that was my original idea. It was like, how can I bring all of this information that I'm learning at my job to people who are like me, young adults, young women who like don't really know what to do with their salary or how to create a budget or how to invest their money. So think about an idea that's like a little bit unique. You have your own unique perspective. You have your own unique level of skills. So get really clear on what am I good at? What do I like? What do my friends come to me for help with? What can I talk about for a long period of time without getting bored? And how can I create something that, you know, is unique to this specific space, or I don't even want to say niche because I feel like that's overdone, but like this area of interest of mine. The second phase is to actually create the product or create the service. So again, whether it's a product or a service or some combination of both is going to depend on what you're talking about, and it will evolve. So with Break Your Budget, originally it started as a service where I was offering budgeting consultations and budgeting help to individual clients. That sort of evolved because I was like, oh my gosh, all of these clients are asking me for a budgeting template and I don't have one. So I created the personal finance dashboard to both solve the need for myself to have a budgeting template, but also to share with my clients because they needed one too to actually implement what we talked about. And then from there, as I sort of started to learn more about what people struggled with, that blossomed into, you know, my 4-week financial plan and all of the other stuff that I have going on. The career stuff eventually too came into this realm as I learned more, experienced more at work, and realized how intertwined money in your career actually is. The next step is the implementation. So this is like actually bringing the idea to life, getting in front of people. I think the reason why some side hustles I feel like get such a bad reputation almost, or why people have such a bad taste in their mouth for side hustling, is because they think you have to be an influencer. You don't have to be an influencer to have a successful side hustle, but you can't be afraid to get seen. So the implementation is like bringing the product or service to life, A. So that's getting clear on like, if it's a service, what am I offering? Who's my ideal client? What are the actual logistics of that service? And the product, if you do have a product, is like, okay, I need to build the product. How am I going to get that product to people? Is it a digital product? Is it a physical product? You know, I'm oversimplifying things here, but like you got to figure that out. And then you actually have to market the product or service. And the reason why I think a lot of people associate this with becoming an influencer is because social media is a free, organic way to market your product or service. And so creating content is a really great way to do that. But there's a distinct difference between being an influencer and being a content creator. Being an influencer, you are an advertisement vehicle for other businesses. Being a content creator, you are the vehicle for advertising your business. very different. Okay, it always drives me crazy when influencers call themselves content creators, because like, yeah, you're creating content, but like, you're an influencer, you're not a it's different to me. But that's, again, my opinion, different conversation. So that's the third step, is actually bringing everything to life. And then the fourth step is the scalability piece. So that's really getting clear on how you can reach more people. It's your ecosystem for growth. So that's creating a marketing system or a content system. So how can you reuse content that you're creating cross-platform? Maybe that could look like some paid ads, campaigns, bringing the marketing plan to life and scaling it. That's creating email funnels. So leveraging email to sell on autopilot. So that's how can I, you know, create free guides, have people opt in, sell to them on a set cadence that you can set up in advance. So as a business owner, you can actually be focused on generating revenue and creating marketing assets as opposed to like the systems behind the scenes. And then also another way to scale is through digital products. So let's say you're a service-based business or a freelance business. What are your most popular services, most frequently asked questions, and how can you create a digital product around that so that you can sell at a lower price, but maybe sell more and more and more of it? So those are the three steps for scaling. Now, I am going to wrap this podcast episode up because it ended up being so much longer than I was expecting. So if you are still listening, congratulations, you've made it to the end. Quick little summary on the 8 ways you can elevate your career. Discover your definition of success at work. Catapult your earning potential by building human capital. Build a rock solid resume that lands you interviews without a connection. Negotiate your salary to earn more money at each job. Nail your next interview so you can get the most competitive offer. Create a task management system for succeeding during pivotal career moments. Choose the right side hustle that will help you make more money and launch and scale a side hustle to a 6-figure business. If you're looking to learn how to do all of this and more, make sure you go pre-order Own Your Career. All of the information is in the show notes. And with that, I will catch you in the next episode.